This week on Sex, Politics, and Bacon, we are thrilled to welcome Jen Santinello, international best-selling author with a brand new book out. Her advice? We all have the ability to change our rules. I share my favorite summer recipe, a new take on Caesar salad, and Rusty recounts the time she ended up on the floor of a van in Connecticut on my wedding day. Join us for another episode of Sex, Politics, and Bacon. So today, I wanted to share with you a crazy easy, inexpensive, unbelievably gourmet food that I am now going to make on the reg. And that is grilled Caesar salad.
Oh, I had that at a restaurant back in the days when we used to go into restaurants.
Well, this is what happened. So I had a particularly long play date with Henry. I went on a play date for 9 hours. So at the end of that time, I was like, I need to get out of here just for a little while. But it was like 10 o'clock at night. So where are you going to go? Right. So I went to my normal haunt. It was already closed. It was a Sunday night. So I went to this other bar and they had a grilled Caesar on the menu. And I wanted a snack, but nothing huge. I was like, perfect. Same thing. I've had it a bunch of times. Always liked it and been like, oh, that's a hard thing to make. No, it really isn't. So that inspired me. And I came home and made my own version. First of all, I just had normal old romaine in a bag. And it had actually mostly gone bad. So I just pulled off all the outside layers until it looked good. And I pretty much just had the hearts and a little bit more. So if you aren't familiar with romaine, the hearts are generally the most coveted parts. And if you need to or choose to just go buy romaine hearts, that's great. They're delicious, but they will be more expensive than general romaine. Yeah, I think one cool trick is that romaine
does grilling the romaine get rid of the E. coli?
Doubtful.
And is there a difference between grilled Caesar and blackened Caesar? Because I can't remember if the restaurant near me was grilled Caesar or blackened Caesar.
It kind of inherently gets blackened. I think that's kind of a choice.
Right.
The waiter said to me that when it came and it was kind of black and had those char marks, I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, you have no idea how many people are like, ew, I wanted a Caesar. Why is that black? And I was like, well, those people are dumb.
Right. You want it to be black.
So I think if you're at the supermarket and you're going to buy romaine and you see it's a little bit turned, go ahead and buy it anyway, because you're going to pull off the first few layers of this anyway. And even romaine that looks pretty bad on the outside is usually still pretty good on the
grilled Caesar salad. Yeah.
Yeah. So first I took romaine and, as I said, washed it, took all the outside out. So then you just kind of have this long stalk. Of romaine
wad,
and you cut it in half lengthwise, so there's one flat side to each piece. So in this case I had two pieces, you know, cut each piece in two, so we had four for me and my husband. And I used a grill pan, which I have a grill pan now and I'm obsessed with it. It gives me those grill marks that just make me so happy. And then I looked around and realized I tried to make real Caesar dressing years ago. It didn't turn out. I didn't like it. And I just sort of left that like, oh, I guess I can't do that. But I looked again at a recipe this time, because it's just like, it's Caesar. The point is Caesar. I love Caesar. I order it all the time. Why am I ordering something I can make myself all the time? Right. And looked at the ingredients and said, I have all these ingredients in my house. This was not a planned meal. This was just, I had everything. So really it's just vinegar, mustard, garlic, and some kind of fish. You know, traditionally it's anchovies. I think I had sardines, but I made the executive decision that it really doesn't matter and my palate will not know the difference. It just needs to be salty. Also, the sardines I used were smoked, which I think gave it a good flavor too. So you throw everything but the olive oil, and I'll link to this recipe. I'm not someone who's going to give you step-by-step recipe directions. I really think it's about learning the basic techniques and then going from there, but I will link to the recipe in the description. And you put it all in the blender, it all right. And then you slowly stream in olive oil. Boom, Caesar dressing. Not only did I think this is really great with this meal, but one of the new food prep plans that I'm following is rather than preparing whole meals, prepare a sauce that you love, prepare a grain that you love, prepare a chicken that you love, and then throw them together with whatever throughout the week. So this Caesar dressing, I've put it on potatoes this week. I've put it a little bit on my eggs, just a little bit, just because I know it's a fresh dressing. I also threw in some fresh parsley because I happen to have some. So I go ahead and I actually took some of the smoked oil from the sardines in the can because they came in oil, and I brushed it on the flat part of the romaine, put a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, and just put them on a nice hot pan. Now, I love char. I love burn. I love smoke. So I intentionally made these burn and just let them sit there. Honestly, maybe 4 minutes on one side, maybe 3 minutes on the other side. Done. And this was a completely, you know, we were basically at the point of like, oh, we should order out. And then I suddenly made this gourmet meal, and I put the two stalks of romaine like crisscross on the plate and drizzled the Caesar dressing around. And then I had this beautiful Parmesan cheese that I just grated big chunky pieces on and showed it to my spouse, and he was like, where did this come from? And it was delicious. And the only thing we were upset about was we didn't have more romaine to grill, but we will rectify that in the future. And I wanted to say that I think it's a really good meal. I think it's super high class and impressive. And also, if this was something you were making for your guests, now it's not something that you could make an hour earlier, it would get wilty and gross. You need to make it right there. But since it's made so quickly, that's something you could do right in front of your guests. I think they would think it's cool. You could do it at the last minute. There's really not much prep to it. And also, I don't think we generally always use our grills to their fullest, especially if you are using a charcoal grill. You usually have residual heat for quite a while before and after. You might use it just for cooking your main protein or whatever it is. So, you know, the beginning of the meal, as it's, you know, put romaine on that grill, put apples, put whatever, everything tastes better on a grill. So this is a meal I recommend. The restaurant also had a balsamic reduction drizzled over it. It was quite a lot of it. I thought it was overkill. I thought it actually didn't work. And there was balsamic in the Caesar dressing, so I didn't feel it was needed. Oh, and I also happened to have some crushed hazelnuts that I sprinkled on top just for kicks.
Kicks. Sounds good.
Oh boy, was it. And it was, I love it when I can have something that I never pictured it being so easy. You know, there's just so many things that we get at restaurants and we're like, ooh, that makes me feel so great and special. Yeah, you can make yourself feel great and special every day.
For those of you that don't have the time, or don't want to do it or whatever reasons, we're not here to judge. Cardini's, I think, makes a very delicious Caesar dressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a jar, and it's kind of...
It's not a jar. It's in a... it's not in the refrigerator.
Right, that's what I was going to say. It's not in the refrigerator section.
It's got a green flat lid.
It looks more like a jelly jar.
No,
than like
no,
a
it doesn't.
Squeeze.
Nope. Oh, it's not a squeeze. It's a cylinder with a tapered neck.
That's right. Cylinder with tapered... Yeah, it actually looks like a Riesling bottle. A little bit. Because Riesling tapers up. Anyway, yes, that's a good one. Also, I will always, when it comes to salad dressings, I'm not a huge fan of salad dressings. I do believe make them yourself, but if you can't, that's a good one. Also,
I haven't found a blue cheese that I
Paul
like.
Paul Newman. He was a wonderful man. May he rest in power.
I don't like their dressings for whatever reason.
If you like them, 100% of the profits go to charity. So if you just can't decide and you're like, oh, I don't want to deal with it, even if you just do that little thing, you're giving money to a good cause.
That's
right?
True.
To be that
I've
simple.
Started buying Numinos. Numinos. Oreos. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my new favorite.
Speaking of white rage, you see how mad everybody got with that general that just made the statement, read all the things that you can.
He
know
said,
the most you can know.
My.
And they're like, Rubidoo!
Last Wednesday, in a House Armed Services Committee hearing on the 2022 defense budget, Republicans pressed Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to investigate the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and its use of critical race theory following reports that a guest lecturer at the academy used phrases such as white rage. Matt Gaetz, took the opportunity to question the military academy's curriculum. Obviously, he's famous for funding a lot of tuition at various schools. So, all of this led to an impassioned response from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley. Let's listen.
On the issue of critical race theory, et cetera, I'll obviously have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is. But I do think it's important, actually, for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and be widely read. And the United States Military Academy is a university. And it is important that we train and we understand. And I want to understand white rage, and I'm white, and I want to understand it. So what is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? What caused that?
Well, what I thought was great is that he said that Gates was a dick, but he's about to go to jail. Do you know Gates? He knows he's being removed from Congress. So he already went to.
Will he be removed from Congress?
Yeah. So he went to OAN, super conservative news. And he's like, okay, yeah. Like, give me a job. And they were like, nope, not interested. And he was like, but I just assumed I could just go be like a angry white pundit. And they were like, nope, not interested. Thanks. You molested people. We're not down with that right now. I think they have had enough lawsuits from after the election that they don't want to deal with it. So I think the good part was then another member of Congress gave
up.
Will he
not go to jail?
It's very hard for me to say right now because they haven't actually charged him with anything. So I don't know whether they're going to be able to charge him with international.
There is too much.
I totally agree. I just
white
don't know
crime being gotten
say,
away with.
Absolutely. I just can't specifically say whether there's going to be jail time. He will get in lots of trouble for sure. And he will get kicked out of Congress. But he knows it because he's still denying it and saying, oh, the truth will come out. But hey, can I get a job? And they're like, no. So what I liked was, Matt Gaetz said something totally awful, but that happens a lot in Congress and there's no after, right? And this other member of Congress reserved her time, gave it back to the general, and the general explained, and these are my words, not his, my amazing privileged education did not prepare me for these situations, did not give me the knowledge to handle these situations. So we have to do better. Our institutions have to do better. We all have to understand race or we all suffer. And I was so glad to hear that, like, given back to him, for him to say it in his words. And it is so powerful to hear this acceptance, openness, interest in learning and curiosity from possibly a symbol of one of the most patriarchal forces in the world, the military of America. So for him to say, even if we're big brazen soldiers with all the guns, we better understand our blind spots and inconsistencies in historical context. And that makes me feel good. These are the leaders that Biden has put in place. So no, things aren't perfect and he's still an old white guy, but he's an old white guy with tons of experience that is really trying.
I saw some kids, like it was parents protesting critical race theory. They had their kids were holding signs that said, I am not an oppressor. Written in their parents' hand, obviously. And like, I get like, it really just sucks to have your feelings hurt and stuff, you know, but you kind of got to just like confront it. So like, let's all get therapy, let's get some counseling and let's face this head on.
I think the defensiveness,
like that comes from being like, you're insulting my ancestor. Well, I'm just spitballing here because my feelings are not hurt in the sense that I don't want to look at it. Like I want to know more about it. I already knew, like, you know, white people, not great. And like America founded on like the big, first of all, taking it over from indigenous peoples. And second of all, enslaving massive amounts of people from another land entirely and bringing them here. It's like, how can you not address that? We need to address it.
What I keep hearing from people, and I will say it's generations older than us, is what is it you want me to say? what is it you want me to do? As if discussing it is about you admitting to something or saying something. It's not about that. It's more, what is it you want me to listen to? This. Listen to this. It may change how you look at things.
Yeah. What is it you want me to do? Yeah.
What does he want me to say? I didn't do that. I'm not a slave owner. Yeah. But what did hearing this news make you feel? And I see people at the beginning of this sort of acceptance and understanding journey, because I've seen a lot of white people through it, is at first, you know, well, I feel terrible. It's awful. Like, people are the worst. And then starting to process, oh, all these other things I just didn't think about. And now it makes a whole lot more sense. And not being so just negative about what isn't and what isn't perceived the way it used to be, what's canceled or woke or whatever word. I'm so sad that the right has co-opted woke, because I think it's a very descriptive word. But also, these are awesome new things to celebrate. Like, grew up with a Greek family. Every Greek holiday is freaking awesome. The food's good. Dancing's good. Everybody's happy. And then friends with Jewish people. That's awesome to learn about, you know? And then Diwali. That's super cool to learn about. None of these are, you can no longer celebrate things because we have to be serious and politically correct. It's, we get to celebrate so many more things.
Right.
So many more ways. Everybody wins.
Right.
This is like, no, I don't want to go into the party. I'm scared that people aren't going to like me. Like, they'll like you, dude. It's cool. Come on in. The water's fine.
Right. And then, you know, I don't know. The news is saying, too, those pictures that I saw are like specifically orchestrated by the GOP, and that's not actual real people, like, they're people that are tied into the GOP, you know, like the deep state, but whatever, but we don't have that about them.
No, and it's just cuckoo. People who think their rights are being taken away or somehow not being represented. I mean, a significant number of the people who committed the insurrection didn't vote. Like, we need our voices heard. You could have voted. That would have been something.
Right.
But you thought the best way was to grab some weapons and beat some innocent people? Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. You can go to jail.
Yeah. Bye-bye, job.
Bye-bye. Just after Trump won, he was driving through Virginia, and there was a woman, the motorcade went by her. She was on her bike, and she flipped him off, and she got fired. Yeah, she's now a state senator in Virginia, one of the more traditionally conservative states when it comes to race, but now has an ability to un-gerrymander their place and actually get DC statehood passed. I mean, so many amazing things can happen. And so it's like, I think so many people think like, yeah, of course, you know, Trump was going to be political because he was rich, all of that. Sometimes your political career starts because you gave the middle finger to someone driving by you. As Howard Dean, the presidential candidate, former governor of Vermont, says, I got in this just for a bike path. He wanted to build a bike path around Lake Champlain, and one thing led to another, and he was running for president. He never meant to. He just wanted a bike path.
Ah!
Damn it. He's like, then he somehow became lieutenant governor, and then what do you know? The governor died, and he became governor, and was like, what? I just wanted a bike path.
Just wanted a bike path in Vermont, but then
and
also...
And he got it. He got his bike path. Well, I want to talk about something, but it involves The Bachelorette, so I know you'll get mad at me.
Ew.
It's about sex positivity, and...
Yeah. Can't you relate that to anything other than The Bachelorette?
It's just amazing examples. So, The Bachelorette revealed this week that... And she had never even told her mother this. She revealed that she was a survivor of sexual assault. And it's a pretty traumatic story, and even made more traumatic by the fact that she said she was so confused as to how to process it that she tried to pursue this man to have a relationship with him, because like that's how she just couldn't really deal with it. And so far she's been touted as this sex positive bachelorette because the first time she came on the previous season, she pulled out a vibrator, which was woo, so crazy, a vibrator. And it was funny and she's very comfortable talking about it. And all the promos up until now have been, she's sex positive, she's sex positive, which is great. And it required many people I know to ask, what is sex positivity? Oh, that's a great thing to ask about. You know, it's about being comfortable, having autonomy, enjoying yourself, not being judged for your choices. As long as things are consensual, everything's cool. Everything's cool. Whatever you want to do, as long as you're not hurting anybody. So that was really cool. But what was interesting is the men who always try to sort of play off whatever the bachelorette is into. For instance, in addition to vibrators, Katie Thurston is also into cats. She's very into cats. So like one guy showed up in a cat suit and spoke in cat puns and she loved it. So being a little wacky, being a little out of that, that's not strange at all. But the men who didn't quite get the positivity, I feel as though interpret it as she is down to fuck, which is not the same as sex positivity. So one contestant's example, for instance, the answer to I'm comfortable myself, I own a vibrator, right? His answer was, here's a Japanese sex doll. I don't feel like those are the same level. I feel as though he took it to creepy.
He gave her a Japanese sex doll.
Well, he's like, when she came in her original season, she was like, had it behind her back. And Katie said, I just, something's just gotten, bring me so much pleasure and joy. And I just want to share it with you. And it was ha ha ha. And she pulled out this and the bachelor thought it was hysterical. Well, this time she's the bachelorette. So this contestant is coming up meeting her and he has something behind his back. And he says pretty much the same thing she said, something that's bringing me so much pleasure and blah, 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 and pulls out a sex doll. And, you know, you're a consenting adult, go ahead. But it just felt to me that these guys were like, cool, she's slutty. You know, like they weren't, there was no part of it that was empowering or understanding what it was about. So that at first was interesting. And the guys like made all these sex jokes. Like they just, it just wasn't interesting. It wasn't intelligent. And I don't want to say it was sex negative, but it certainly wasn't positive. And then they have this episode night before last that was very emotional. And about 10 of the men had to tell like some of their deepest, darkest secrets. And what is fascinating about this is that virtually every single guy's story is about cheating on a woman and how bad they felt about it. Which, fine, they apologize, people learn. But like, that's their worst stories, how badly I hurt someone else. And so she shares her deepest story and it's, I was sexually assaulted. And coming out of it, the men were like, wow, we all did a really good job. You know, it's like, you didn't actually, you got some ass. That's your terrible story and you made someone feel bad. Like, that's not really being vulnerable. You all shared almost the exact same, and that's all you can really think of is I cheated on someone. You know, they didn't go deeper. They didn't talk about other issues or.
But I feel like that's just the show as a whole is shallow and stupid.
I know. And you can think that they haven't ever done something like this. No person has ever come out and just said, but what she said too was, I didn't want to talk about sex. I didn't have it for a long time. I was terrified to talk about sex. So this positivity truly came out of something awful. And so now when people see me that confident, I want them to know this did not come out of, I was always confident and I could always talk about these things. So I thought it was a great message, you know, because so many people have experienced this, but I just feel as though men, cis men, struggle to match the level of comfort and classiness of sex positivity because it's so often considered dirty.
Right.
I don't believe that a vibrator is the equivalent of a Japanese sex doll. I think every woman should have a vibrator. I don't care how many men, I don't think men need Japanese sex dolls.
Hmm.
You know what someone should have brought? this would have been a good one. But of course, a woman would think of this. Somebody should have brought her batteries. That would have been funny.
I feel like a lot of, well, vibrators these days are just rechargeable.
Oh, of course. But it's more about the show of it than the actual. Right.
That would be classy.
And some of these people are producer plants that are just made to make you go.
Ugh, I hate that. It's so gross.
I know.
Yay!
Enough about me. What do you think about me? You know me, and what are your impressions of me? Like, basically, how do I know you? Oh my goodness. Well, when did you meet me? Okay. Do I have to date myself? Can I just say in college? I don't care. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, I know you from my good old college days when life was way different, easier, responsibility-less than it is now.
That's true.
Than it is now, when it was just fun and games and a little bit of learning in between. From DeFi-E.
Okay, DeFi-E, but like, do you remember meeting me and what were your first impressions of me?
Oh, gosh. Well, you came into the sorority after I did. So I remember your pledge class. I remember you were loud and funny. Not much has changed. So pretty loud and funny. But you were also one of the biggest pieces of glue for your pledge class. So you kind of held your little crew together. And you're just a leader. You stand out everywhere you go. You're a leader. That's how I remember you from back in college and getting crazy and doing fun things. And then even into our adult years, pre-kids, when you came out to Arizona to visit, it got even crazier. So dancing in the rain, random trips to In-N-Out Burger.
It was such a good night.
that was a funny night. But yeah, I'm just glad that we've managed to keep in touch even from the crazy college days all the way through now. Now we have kids, and isn't that crazy? We have kids. We're responsible for other humans now.
It's so crazy, especially that I've reconnected with some friends from before. And you know, when you start talking to someone that you might have known when you're 15 or something, you kind of go back to that, and then it hits you like, wait, you're now responsible for a human life?
Yeah.
Like, you're an idiot. What are you? Oh my God.
People change, Abby. People change.
Or they don't. Like, or that's how stupid we all are. And there you go. Right. And then you figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, life happens, you adjust. And so, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not the same person I was in my 20s, for sure.
I mean, I feel so much of you is the same, right? Like, I'm not saying you haven't learned or changed or grown. You completely have. But like, who Jen is.
Well, I know. But.
Right. So that's what's so great for me coming back to it and knowing, you know, we hadn't spoken in so long and you'd been through the craziest fucking situation I can ever imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You're still you inside. I can tell. So there's that. But yeah.
No, I mean, at our core, we're all who we are. But if we weren't growing and evolving, we wouldn't be human. So.
No. And actually, I think actually to remain that core, you have to adapt how that is shown as you grow and age.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if I still was like, hi, you're my new black friend. Like, that's what I said to my sophomore year roommate. Right? Now.
Oh my gosh.
Because I'm honest and yeah. I was excited and I thought that was great. Right? But me showing that wild, loud, open to all kinds of people, that looks different now.
Yes.
Even though it's still there, I don't say that.
Yes. Right.
I say, good. Oh my God, thanks. No more white people. I'm so sick of them. Right? So much classier. Anyway. yes. So we're getting up to it, obviously. So to our listeners, yes, this is my sorority sister, Jen. She's super cool and fun and pretty and smart and really, really good at planning super fun nights and days. And I'm so happy to
that's
have.
That's why I was an event planner for 20 years of my life.
Well, that's why I mean, like, that's, yeah, yeah. And yes, we've recently reconnected and you have had some crazy things happen in your life and are now coming out with a book. And I just want to hear, you tell me the story, you tell me all about all this exciting, crazy, wonderful stuff that's going on.
Where do you want me to begin? How far back? I mean, gosh, I mean, today looks far different than it did 6-10 years ago.
Right. So, I mean, I think part of, you know, this is really about, I guess, the book, because that's what you're coming out with in that focus. So what kind of primer would you want to give for this book you're coming up with?
Okay, so I wrote a book. How crazy is that?
Yay!
Literally, I was the editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper. My high school... Were you too? That's awesome! This was, you know, my teachers in high school encouraged me to go to Northeastern University for journalism, and then I decided I don't want to be a reporter. So I dropped out of journalism and went and became an event planner instead. How fun, right? But obviously it was innate and destined for me to write something eventually. And I was encouraged 6-7 months ago to write a book. And I said, well, I actually have something to say now. It only took me, you know, 20 years to figure that out, but I finally have something to say. And I, unfortunately, had to write about my loss, a loss in my life, which was the loss of my husband, 6.5 years ago.
Wow.
It's been 6.5 years. And so the book's not all about my story. It is. It kind of weaves throughout
right. The
book, my story. And I do tell how I became a widow, which was at the age of 36 when all my kids were under the age of 4. I kind of walk readers through the brief cancer journey that I went through because it only spanned 5.5 months and then it was over. And then I kind of recap what it was like to be a widow in your 30s. It's kind of shocking. You live a lot of it in denial, and you really don't know how you're going to figure out the rest of your life at that point because you had planned it with somebody else who's no longer there. And so I kind of talk about the initial phases of what that looks like, and it's mostly just survival mode. It's really just survival mode. And then kind of this shift that most widowers or widows make at some point when they decide, it's really a choice that they have to decide. Either you're going to be bitter for the rest of your life or you're going to choose happiness. And that is absolutely a choice. And some people will tell you, no, it's not. I'm going to be sad forever. And you will always miss a significant other that's no longer around. That's just being human. But it is a choice to want to be happy. And then there are steps you can take to be happy. And so the rest of the book is really just my journey of how I became happy again, how I went from despair to thriving. And I use examples from my own life. There's, you know, Sam, Emma, and Evan all made it into the book.
Oh, how could they not?
I mean, you know, it's kind of just about our journey. I also use examples from, you know, the many widows and widowers that I've had a chance to talk to all over the globe over the last 2 years. And so like I said, it's my story in the beginning, but it's really mostly about how anybody can overcome tragedy and really get to a good place in life again. And I tell you how I did that. I mean, mm-hmm. My loss was absolutely devastating. I had no idea. I mean, literally, when my husband passed away, I thought to myself, my life's over. My best days are behind me.
How could you think anything else?
You can't. At that point, it was like, and I was taking care of a 4-month-old, a 2-year-old, and a 3-year-old on my own, trying to figure out what's next for me. What's next for me? I'm 36 years old. That's it. I was put here to raise these 3 kids. Once they're adults, this is done. Like, there's nothing left for me here.
Right. You're not a person anymore.
I'm not.
You don't have a life.
I didn't know what that could possibly look like. It was like, it's like you're walking across your living room at warp speed and then someone turns out the light. You're mm-hmm. like, of course, you stop. You're like, where am I? What do I do next? Where do I step next? When is the light going to go back on? When can I see a path forward? When does that happen? Right. So naturally mm-hmm. you slow down. And so when I became a widow, I was searching all over the internet and in local libraries for like books about other young widows
yeah.
and how they did it. How did they really, what I was searching for was hope. I wanted someone else's story to inspire me and then tell me how to recover from this. And nothing like that existed at the time.
Connection, inspiration.
I
keep saying, because having been all over the world, like, everyone really goes through all the same things. They really do. Not literally, but emotionally.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean, think about it. There's trial all over the world. There's tragedy all the time.
Well, and
you may not lose your husband, but you've probably been through something, right?
Or not only that, you know, I think about the older generations. My Nana, who just turned 101, you know, has lived through some freaking wars, and her and a lot of her female friends became widows very young. She became a widow at 60, which is still pretty young and very suddenly. But I've never heard any of them talk about it, deal with it. What is it like? And, you know, it's just like, but that is just life. That is just what you do. And you keep, you raise the kids and then.
Then what?
Who cares?
That's it. I was like, but what I really struggled with was, why am I still here?
Survivor's guilt. Why am I still here?
Like a little bit, but I just kept thinking, you know, everything happens for a reason. What is the reason behind this? Why am I here?
Right.
Why was I brought into this world to, you know, grow up, go to college, get a good job, start a great career, marry this guy who in 10 years after we had our third child was just going to disappear on me? For what? What's the reason? Why am I here? What's my purpose? What is the meaning for this? Right. And I really struggled with that because I really truly thought, how on earth will I ever be happy again? Like, I could not see it. Like, I could not picture
it. Or just not be miserable.
Right. I just really thought, like, this is it for me. Wow. Yeah. My life's over.
Like, this is how it's going to feel forever. Yeah.
This is my best days are behind me. And of course, that's not true. I mean, but I think a lot of people who lose somebody that feel that way initially. And I really tried to capture that in the first couple chapters of the book. I really just tried to capture what that feels like for people who have not been through it so that you truly get a real honest look at the initial stages of grief. But then I walk you through how to go from despair to being happy again. So honestly, I think anybody can make their comeback story. I made a comeback story, right? I turned the whole thing around. I even left my career as an event planner and became a coach for other widows behind me, right? So this kind of brings you full circle through the whole journey from, my story of how Tim actually died, that initial despair, that initial year of survival mode, and then everything I did over the next 4 to 5 years to get to the good place I'm in today. It's basically a how-to guide for anybody behind me on this path.
Okay, how do we do it? How do we do it?
How do you do it?
I want the cliff notes.
The cliff notes are you have to get to a place of acceptance, not, and I say acceptance with really being able to accept that life isn't perfect and really just accept your circumstance for what it is. Stop holding on to resentment. Stop holding on to guilt. Stop holding on to it wasn't supposed to be this way.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Let it go and start focusing on the here and now and the future instead of the past. Bring those memories with you, but you're focus forward, right?
Right.
Change the story going on in your mind. You cannot be happy if you keep telling yourself life is hard.
So what was your story that was going on in your head?
Life is hard. My life sucks.
This sucks. This sucks. This sucks.
My life sucks. My life is hard. I really had to change my story to this is temporary. I'm going to be happy again. I always say everything's falling into place for me. It's really, you start to use affirmations like that or a daily mantra and you will rewire your brain to believe it.
It's so true. And I've told this to so many people. This is what I'm like for the first like 2 hours I wake up. I'm just like drained. I don't know why it's always been this way. Whenever I talk to this is why I try to wake up earlier. People are just like, are you sick? I'm like, no, this is every day of me. I don't know why. Also, I live in Maryland. Like, you live in a swamp too. Like,
yeah, it's Maryland very humid here.
It's so, yeah. Anyway. It is these simple, what at first feel trite things that actually completely make all the sense. And I fear sometimes when you say, yeah, you need to be positive. You need to say this to yourself every day, whatever. People are like, great. Just be like, everything's okay. And then
it's not.
That's what it sounds like, especially when you first hear it. Because first of all, it sounds so dumb. It sounds so simple. Something simple can't help. Because if it's so simple, how could it not, how could it help so much, right?
Yeah.
Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy. And it's simply about, like you said, it's reprogramming. Like when I say this to people, I'm like, this isn't this toxic positivity that people want to have out there. Like life is great and you better appreciate it. Like, no, there's fucking suffering out there. And if your mantra doesn't accept that there is suffering and that hard things are going to happen, that's never going to work. And it's really just a, like, if you want to sell a little meme, that's like,
right,
I'm a bitch, I can do it all, right? Like, that's not it.
Right. You know? But I, and I, like, even with my coaching clients, I will take, when you hear, when you talk to somebody who's suffered, right? When you talk to somebody who doesn't really know how to make that leap from despair to even okay, right? The words they use, the choice yep. of beliefs that they use are very clear when they talk to you.
Yep.
And so what I like to do is point it out to them, what they're mm-hmm. actually saying. And then I have them adjust it just slightly so that it sounds just a teensy bit better. Right. And so like, and then I even say like, okay, you're not happy yet, but train yourself to remind yourself every single day that you're 100% in charge of your happiness. You are. You choose whether or not you want to be happy. So you may be sad and in despair right now, but if you woke up every day and while you brushed your teeth for 2 minutes, you said, I'm 100% in charge of my own happiness. And you said that for 2 minutes straight every morning, guess what's going to happen eventually? Your actions are going to start to change every day. You're going to be marching toward the things that are going to bring you your own happiness. Instead of, my life sucks. I'll never be happy. I'm not okay. Well, guess what? When you say those things over and over in your brain believes that and you start to take action to make that your reality. So if you want a different reality, change what you say to yourself. Change your story. You want to know my phone says?
What?
one of my affirmations is, everything always falls into place for me, because I want to believe that. I want to believe that everything is falling into place for me. You want to have trust in the universe, right? And so that's what I read every day. Everything is falling into place for me.
Mine says, you are amazing, but I have to say, I am amazing. On my phone since, I think it was about a little after my first hospitalization for depression. I did that and I felt none of it. I thought it was so dumb. I would look at it and go, I'm amazing. But I just kept doing it. 4 years later, I am still doing it. It is of all the things I've done every single day for the last 4 years. I have not even brushed my teeth all of those days. I have not left the house all of those days. You know what I'm saying? There's some of those days I did not eat. Like, that's how crazy things have been. But every single day I have done that.
That's awesome.
And when I would hear that, I'd be like, well, first of all, like when I'd hear people in my program say that at the beginning of this journey, when you're first, I don't want to say when you're first experience it, when you're first on the, okay, I'm going to try to just take one step. It seems stupid. And it's also like, well, great. I'm 4 years behind you. Like, you've already done it. But I just did it one day and it seems so stupid. It seems so stupid. But I thought, what's the harm? And I'll say this too. I want people to know this too. I tried like 20 different types of affirmation things on the reg, right? Like, I did go a month and journal every day. I did go and have the reminder on my phone. I tried all these different things and most of them didn't work. So I completely get where people are like, I tried that. I'm just not a journal person. It's just not who I'm going to be. If it doesn't feel somewhat comfortable, comforting to me, then you're not going to keep doing it. So I do want to say that. Yeah. I don't think there's one size fits all for how you program. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but affirmations are one page of my 200-page book, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, if people, because I have, especially when you're in that moment, you're very quick to be like, it didn't work. You know what I mean? Because that when you are at your darkest moments, right? And I'm not talking, and you know, there's obligation. I feel like I should, all that. But when you decide to pick up the phone and call someone, you decide to just, you know, be in a moment. There's just, for some reason, certain people you just don't want to talk to. And certain people you really are okay with talking to. And it's not, for me at least, it's not always the most obvious. Close, but I actually have a lot of very close friends, but some of them just, their comfort at that moment, it just wasn't comforting to me. And right. I don't know how to explain it. And I didn't know how to explain it at the time. And I don't want to insult people. And it's not that they're good people. But there's just sometimes that some people can kind of sit with you where you are rather than just try to cheer you up. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, because did you feel like alienated a little bit? Did you feel like no one understands? Did you feel like
it just felt pointless?
Different.
It's like, why am I talking? Why are we even talking?
Yeah. Well, for me, like probably the first few years after Tim passed, like I just felt like my life was now so different than everybody else's, and I was different from everybody else. No one could even venture a guess at what it was like to live in my shoes. Mm-hmm. No one could come close to understanding what I was going through. And so I just kind of became recluse. I didn't mm-hmm. socialize. I didn't talk to people. I would literally sit outside the preschool and watch other dads bring kids to and from the building and cry. And
you're going
to
make me cry.
Whew. Like, it was just Ooh, like all the things
that is some good torture.
Well, I mean, it was after I dropped my son off.
Oh yeah. No, I know you weren't.
I wasn't just randomly stalking preschool.
But either way, it's pretty powerful. It's
like the things that you don't think about, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I just, every time it happened, I would think that will never be us. My kids will never get to have their dad pick them up anywhere. Even like the stupid little, like the songs that like the class holidays and the parties and stuff where they all like sing together and goof off and come, and like all the other sets of parents are in there like photographing it and smiling and stuff. And I'm literally holding back the tears and trying to manage a smile for Sam, right? It's like all the things he's now missing. That's everything that went through my mind every time. It's all stuff he's missing. And it just sucked. And so I didn't talk to people. I didn't share a lot, you know? And you're right. People will say things like, you'll be fine. I had someone tell me that it was like within the weeks following Tim's death, somebody told me something along the lines of, you'll be fine in a year. Like, it'll feel better in a year because, you know, time heals. And it's like, fuck off. Like, mm-hmm. are you kidding me right now? I'm like, I'm 36 and I just lost my best friend. Like, and I'm now raising our children alone.
Right. Like
fuck off. Like, and are you kidding?
What I found my best of intention friends, and these are close friends. I'm not talking about like, these are of decades friends, but that was the thing. They just kept wanting to fix my depression.
Yeah.
And it made me feel so aware that they had no concept as to what it meant. Depression is not a bad mood. That's not the same thing. Okay. Right.
Yes.
I have lived through COVID and not been any more depressed than the average human was on this planet, right? It's been hard. There have been bad weeks. That's not depression. That's, mm-hmm. you know, and so when someone else tries to offer you a simplistic response that doesn't make any sense, it shows, number one, that they completely don't get what you're going through at all. If it were that easy, if it was just wait out this bad mood, I wouldn't have to be hospitalized. Come on, you know?
Right.
And the second thing is it feels as though they're showing you their inability to deal or connect
and I don't,
with what's the challenge in their life.
I don't fault people for not having the words for something they don't understand at all. But that's exactly why I stopped talking.
Right. About and I'm not going to tell talking. These people that, you know, like I didn't say, you know, I just didn't return the calls. I just didn't have it in me. And for some reason, this other person, Becca, because she would just be like, how you doing? I'm terrible. Okay. You want to watch a movie?
You know?
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah. Me too. You know, she's terrible too. Cause she's been through the depression and, you know, it's like you'll be better. Oh, just take a shower. Just, you know, get a haircut. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say to someone who has been through this kind of like, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, all of that, but.
You can't. I mean, just
is there one thing
whatever
that
you
just
need
could be, it could help you go, okay, that's a resource versus that's someone else I have to avoid. Right. Like that you could show someone you're there for them, but you're not imposing. You're not setting expectations, you know?
Yeah. I would just avoid trying to, like you said, fix it by saying like, I'm just so like, you know, acknowledge what happened by saying, I'm so sorry. But then literally follow it up with, I'm here for you in whatever way that you need. If you just need to vent, vent. If you need me to make you a meal and drop it off on your front door, tell me to do that. I will do anything that you need at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fathom what you're going through, but I'm here in any way that you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all we want to hear, because no one can possibly understand unless they've been through it themselves. Unless they've been through it themselves.
There's something about that's so universal, the loss, and there's also so specific. You know, for some people, a very healthy way of coping is completely being not social. That can be a step towards, you know, being healthy. For other people, it's, you know, go out and talk to every, you know, like there's lots of ways.
There is something therapeutic about talking about the story. The more times you tell your story, the more times you cry about it, it's healing, right? I did that with a therapist.
Right, so I'm saying
I didn't do it with every Tom, Dick, and Harry on the street.
Right. You know? A trained professional who's like, I'm prepared for this. I'm not going to take it over. I'm not going to judge. You know, like, yeah, it's completely true. And that's what I think people don't get, is that talking to a professional is so entirely 100 million percent different than talking to other people.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Although I will tell you that grief counseling did not work for me. So I went through 3 different grief counselors.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
One told me it was good to have feelings after she yawned. The next handed me a Word document, a printed out Word document with the 5 stages of grief on it. I was like, thanks. I could have printed that out from the internet. And I can't remember. I think I eventually found a therapist who really just was so honest with me about things. And that's what I needed. I needed
direct.
Direct, honest, not, you know, it's good to have feelings and this is all normal. You're going through the 5 stages of grief, which it was just like, really? I'm paying you for this? You know, like, this is not helpful. Like, I know
thanks,
I'm sad. I know
for
I'm
the
angry.
Psychology 101
I'm like,
class.
Can you please tell me, like, how to get out of these feelings? I don't want to feel this way forever, right? Like, yeah. I'm hoping to see a light at the end of this tunnel, and all you're telling me is that it's good to be dark. No, I don't want to be in this dark place, right? So that's when I started, like, I stopped going to grief counseling, and then I just started taking things into my own hands. And so I really just started reading tons of books, going to seminars and listening to audio tapes on my lunch break, you know, and really just trying different things and making a commitment to myself and to Tim to be okay, to find a way to be okay, and for my kids. And it took me many years to get to the place I'm in today. I mean, I can tell you Tim's story now without crying, and I can talk about Tim and watch videos of Tim now with a smile on my face. And I wasn't there. And it took time, but it also took me getting to a good place to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, and to get to a good place, again, remember, I was like, what now? My best days are behind me, right? Like, I had no plan for the rest of my life. And that, for an event planner,
I was going to say, for you especially,
was terrifying. Right. And so I immediately jumped back into my career as an event planner, but it was so mind numbing. It was like, It served only the purpose of keeping my mind busy during the day.
And a paycheck.
I mean, and a paycheck.
Yeah.
But then I'd come home to chaos. So I was burning myself out at work and I was burning myself out at home. And so it was no wonder I was in survival mode for so long. And it was when I actually took steps to change my work environment and took steps to, like, heal myself and my kids, that thing, the tide started to turn. And so, I mean, first I really had to, like, get really clear on what I wanted out of my life. And that's hard to do, even if you haven't been through something tough. Most people mosey through life. But at the end of the day, when you're 90, sitting in your rocking chair on your front porch, looking back at your life, what do you want to say you did? What kind of life do you want to say you lived? And I wasn't living that. When I figured that out and I looked back at my life pretending I was like 90 or 100 years old, like, what kind of life after I had seen how quickly life could be taken away, I now live every day. Like, even yesterday, I thought, if I were to be dead tomorrow, what would I do today? And I stopped everything. And I'm like, guys, let's play Monopoly. I'm going for a run. And I just started doing things differently, right? But I took that real, like, zoom lens back and kind of looked back and said, okay, I'm going to come up with a list of everything I want to do in my life. And instead of waiting 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years till I'm retired, I may not make it to retirement. I'm going to start doing all those things now.
Mm-hmm.
So I just changed the way I live. And so I kind of in the book talk about that. I talk about how to gain clarity about what you want for yourself, the kind of lifestyle you want to live, the kind of person you want to be, the things you want to do, accomplish, see, have. And really, I walk you through like three different exercises to help you get clarity. And then I hold your hand through the book and make you take steps toward those new goals. Like we create new goals. We walk through those goals. We come up with plans. I come up with like, well, it's all like the practices that I do throughout my life to like stay in a positive place, because it's so easy to turn your head over your shoulder and look back at the past and get really sad and miserable and whatnot when you're not going that way. You've got to be looking forward and taking steps forward, because this is your life now and you've got to make the best of your current circumstances. Always.
Would you like to see the big doggy?
Okay.
It's a big doggy.
Whoa.
Oh,
hello,
it's
doggy.
A big doggy. She can burst through any door.
Yeah. Nice.
She's in charge, not me. I thought it was Joe coming in. That's why I was like, hello. Oh, no. Big dog. That stinks. Get out. I love you. Get out of here. Oh, no. Oh, that means come over. Hello. You didn't know the world revolves around my dog? Because it does. So I'm going to agitate you a little bit, because I think there are people out there who will hear, great, privileged white lady had this sad thing happen, got to quit her job, must be nice.
I didn't quit without a plan.
I know. I'm throwing this out. Right. You know what I'm, no, but I'm saying, like, okay, so there's, and I'm not criticizing you in any way, shape, or form. I'm 100% with you. I'm trying to hear through a lens of that I think that I've been raised, I don't know about you, to a certain extent that, yeah, we can do anything. And we've had this, you know, wonderful basis of confidence, and we got to have education and these things that many people did not have the opportunities to. And sometimes I think when we are in a dark place, we're quick to go, well, she can do that because she had that thing. She had that thing, right? You know,
that's so a mindset.
It is. And so I just want to speak to that, because so many times people are like, well, it's easy for you to say rich white lady. And I'm like, no, I get that. I do get that part of it,
rich.
But you're well, true. But I'm just saying, even if that's your perception, right? Because comparatively we're very rich compared to many people in this world, honestly, but it's still also about a mindset. And there are many rich people who can't do this either. So like, it isn't just about that. So if you can just sort of speak to the, okay, you're not at a point you can leave your job right now. You really don't have that much money. How would you speak to it that way?
Maybe. Yeah. Money doesn't fall out of the sky. So I'm still making a living. I'm just doing it in a different way. When I say I gained clarity about what I wanted for myself and my life, I didn't want to work the 9-to-5 anymore, because I am now the only parent my kids have, and I didn't want to miss their childhood years. I started taking steps in a direction to make the 9-to-5 go away, that I could actually sustain a life. I'm not living luxurious by any means, but I can now afford to work from home as a coach, a life coach, and be with my kids when they get off the school bus. So it all comes down to what's important to you. I'm not saying like if you can't afford to not have a job, I can't afford not to have a job.
Right, right.
But I knew what I wanted for myself. I knew I wanted a flexible lifestyle. And so again, it took me 4 to 5 years to have the lifestyle I have right now. This did not happen overnight.
Maybe that step is, it could be going for a promotion. It could be maybe starting night school. It could be, saving a little bit.
I know widows who went back to school. I know widows who have started foundations. I know, my goals are not your goals in life. All I'm saying is that when you lack clarity, you stay stuck. And when you stay stuck and aren't making progress toward anything, you feel like you're in a rut. And when you feel like you're in a rut, you're miserable and unhappy. Mm-hmm. So when you go through the exercises to figure out what you actually want for yourself, then you can actually write down goals and take little baby steps toward those goals. And when you're making progress, progress is happiness. Ever think about anything that you've ever accomplished in life? You finally met a goal, any goal, graduating from Northeastern University, right? How happy were you that day?
I think I was pretty hungover.
Okay. Different moment. Something. You graduated law school. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, very proud.
Okay. Very day. Proud.
That
right?
was hard. This is one of the hardest things. Other than motherhood, law school is the hardest thing. And marriage.
Law school. Okay. But then how long did that high last? Was it a couple days, a few months, a year, 2 years?
No.
Right. Because we are designed to keep progressing and evolving, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I think about, I give this example in the book. After Tim died, it was like a year later, I decided I was going to take back my health. And it was probably a year and a half later. And I started running again. And so then I ran a half marathon and I beat my time by 15 minutes. I was so dang proud that I crossed the finish line, handed my finisher medal to an engraver right there on site at the finish line and said, engrave my new time on the back of my medal because I am that awesome, right? And
yo!
I was so proud of myself. The next day, I was like, okay, now what? Right? Because we're constantly trying to make progress towards something. And if you don't have goals because you lack clarity, you're not making progress toward anything. And progress is going to lead you to happiness. It's yeah. just how we are.
And goals, really, like, I remember that I spent a while when I was at my lowest, I had to, you know, take the metro to work. And then I took this big, huge escalator up. And I would just, okay, I'm going to walk up the escalator. I'm going to keep walking, not just stand there, up to this light post. You know, and I do that every, and it was so small, but eventually I could walk this whole way. Like,
mm-hmm.
it does not have to be, I'm going to change everything in my life, especially when you first start.
Oh, I didn't. It was like one thing at a time.
Like what? Like, I'm going to shower today? I mean, honestly, showering mornings were the most anxious part of me because my mornings are the most painful. Sidebar. I'm getting the surgery first week of August, and I think I'm going to be like very close to pain free. So like,
Yay!
It's going to be amazing.
Yay!
I can't wait. And I'm going to, you know, chronicle all that because physical pain and emotional pain are best friends. it's kind of hard to be in physical pain and not be in emotional pain. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think for people who are like, oh, now I got to go. Yeah. I'm going to start a foundation. No, it can be.
No. And so I'm saying like, so I walk you through three different exercises in the book. One of them is to zoom out to you're like 90, 100 years old and you're looking back on your entire life. And it's the kind of life you want to live, right? But I also have you do an exercise where it's 1 year from now. How would you like life to be different? Say it was the best year of your life. What would make it the best year of your life? Like, close your eyes and envision it being 1 year from now. What's different if you had the best year of your life, right? And then there's a third exercise that I learned in this book called Worthy. And it's basically you sit down and you write out your 50 top desires in life. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in a Toyota dealership. My minivan was getting something done, maybe an oil change or something. And I couldn't get past number 5. And I had to come up with a list of 50 desires for myself in this lifetime. 50 things, anything, frivolous, tactical, anything I wanted to see, do, have, achieve,
give,
whatever.
Give me some examples. Like, I want to go to Africa or something.
Yeah,
like, or,
that could whatever. Be an example. Or I want to be able to walk into a car dealership one day and buy a car in cash. Or I want to go on a one-on-one trip with each of my children eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I want to save $5,000 this year. Or I want to, you know, it could be anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I literally couldn't get past number 5. I mean, I was like,
we're the first 4. Like, I want my kids to be happy.
Yeah. Like really I want to, one of them was, I want to get this coaching business off the ground. I have it printed out in my bedroom. It's up on my wall. So it's these three different exercises to get you from like, so yeah, there are things that are stuff that you can do within the first year and there's stuff that you want to do long-term. Right. And so it's, throughout all three exercises, by the end of that chapter, you should have a pretty good idea of what kind of things you want to do in your lifetime, even if you don't think that they're feasibly going to happen this month or even this year. They're just things that you want to go after, because then you can start taking steps in that direction and you're going to start to feel good when you make progress. So that's part of it. So it's, you know, it's getting clear. It's kind of changing your story. It's working on your belief system a little bit, trying to rewire your brain, but it all comes down to really a choice.
Yeah.
You get to choose how you want to spend the rest of your days. You can either choose to stay stuck, become miserable and bitter, or you can choose to work on enjoying life more, work on your own happiness, because happiness does come from with you. It's not going to fall out of the sky into your lap suddenly one day. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You have to work at it yourself. And so this book is really like a how-to guide on how to bridge the gap between hopeless and happy again.
It really sounds so much more applicable to just any sort of any challenge in life. It's not necessarily.
It's geared. There's a lot of widow and widower examples throughout the book. I pull from my clients, stories from my clients, and just other widows that I've talked to over the past couple of years. I have a widow and widower Facebook group. So some of the information I pull is from their stories, just to make those who pick up the book feel less alone, because I felt so alone
when
I first became widowed. And so my goal was to make someone else on this path feel less alone, and not just give them hope, but give them a how-to guide on how I managed to get to a good place again. But honestly, I have people reading the book right now in advanced copy. It's coming out on August 3rd, but I have
August 3rd.
Yeah, right. I can't believe it. But I have some folks reading the book now who are not widows at all, and they're gaining so much from it.
So many. I'm helping a friend right now, unfortunately, deal with a custody thing, and not a divorce, but separation from her partner. Like, so many of the things you're talking about with friends I have that have gone through divorce, it's a lot of similar things, right? It's about dealing with the loss. Your life is not going to look the way you thought it was. How do you want to change it? Right? Like, I know there are many, many differences.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot of universality there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it all comes down to, we all have the ability to triumph over tragedy, no matter what you've been through. You have the choice to take steps forward and create a better life for yourself. That is a choice. And it comes down to you making that choice.
Right. And it's not, okay, I made the choice, now my life's perfect.
Like, no. And that's why I then give you steps to do the work, right? So here's the work that I did. I'm basically summing up what I did over the course of 4 to 5 years. Here you go, right? There you go. Here's everything I did over 4 to 5 years, and hopefully your journey takes half as long as it did for me.
This is so amazing. So tell me the name of the book.
It's The Widower's Guide to Reclaiming Happiness. Basically, how to create your own comeback story.
And it will be hitting bookstores on August 3rd.
I'm not doing anything wild and crazy like book signings and stuff, especially with all like the COVID stuff coming to an end and whatnot. So
go to Amazon?
Amazon.com, The Widower's Guide to Reclaiming Happiness.
And say your last name.
Jen Santanello.
Listeners will recognize that I forget that people get married and change their names, because I didn't. And I still am like, so-and-so. And everyone's like, that has not been her name for 20 years. And I'm like, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Another thing I wanted to ask about, or two other things actually, was just sort of the gender part of it. Have you seen a difference in dealing with how, I guess it's widows versus widowers. I don't really understand why there's these two terms.
Yeah.
But, I find a lot of times that, along with all this other self-doubt, blah, blah, that women can throw in a lot of shame and guilt, and or just different types. Or have you noticed a difference, or is this – my dog's attacking me. I apologize. You know the question.
Yes. Honestly, I've worked with both widows and widowers, and at least when you're dealing with loss, the issues seem to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
For both genders. I'm thinking to my coaching clients right now, and we all want the same thing. We all want to learn how to be happy on our own. We all want the confidence and the courage to be able to do that on our own.
Yeah.
And as I tell my clients, there was a you before there was a we, and it's really,
oh, that's powerful.
It's really rediscovering yourself again. And looking at everything that you've already done in your life to help boost that confidence, right? Like, if you looked back at your life and thought about everything you accomplished on your own before you were with a partner, the list is likely long. And so, I mean, it is. I mean, you've done things before there was a we, right? You have your own journey. And so, I think we lose sight of that when we get married and or with somebody for a long time. And when that person is no longer there, you both genders become like, oh my gosh, I can't do this on my own. I'm never going to be happy again and whatnot. But it's really getting back to you and learning how to be comfortable with you again.
Mm-hmm. And the reality in reality. Yeah. So one issue, do you talk about dating, sex after this? I mean, that I've had a couple friends. My one friend said after his girlfriend passed suddenly, this was long, long time ago, that he felt like he was cheating.
Yeah,
that's on guilt. His girlfriend. And he was young when this happened, like 19. I mean, it was very weird. But when he was like, what, the first person that I like hooked up with, he was just a normal 19-year-old. He's like, we never broke up. Like, I'm having sex with someone. I just didn't know if that was something you talk about, because sex is so intimately related with your intimacy. And this specific person in our society, that was the last person you were intimate with, right? In theory. Yeah. Do you address, because you talk a lot about professional goals. Is there, you know, is it, I want to have another family. I want to love again.
No, I don't address dating in the book, though. I mean, I could write a whole second book on my dating experience.
Please do. No, just, we only have 10 more minutes. I know. That's what I really want to know.
I mean, literally, like, I went on 50, they could have made a movie, 50 First Dates as a Widow. Like, it was some comedic stories in there. But I don't address it in the book. I try to really get back to you being okay on your own. But my clients themselves are open to love again. They even grow by the end of our coaching experience together. Many of them are with somebody else by the end, you know, because they've found themselves and they realize that this idea of I can't be with another person is really their own rule. And we all have the ability to change our rules. And so the guilt comes from basically us shooting on ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. You should do this or you shouldn't do that. That's your own rule.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to change your own rule. My rule is not going to look the same as your rule. We all have our own rules, right? And so if you really truly want to be happy and companionship is in the picture for you, if having someone by your side long-term, because most of the widows I work with are young, you know, 30s, 40s, even young 50s, they don't want to be alone for the rest of their lives. So it's really getting to a place where they're comfortable on their own again and then stepping back out into the dating world. And I coach a lot of people on how to do that. I've once heard somebody told me, you know, if you really go back into the dating world with the expectation that you're going to, you know, have to date 100 frogs before you meet your prince, then it becomes less, you know, frightening. Almost, right?
It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. Like when you treat it like a game, all of a sudden it's not so terrifying, you know? Because dating when you're in your 30s, 40s, and 50s is not the same as when you're in your 20s, let me tell you. Tell you that I chugged a beer before my first date ever after Tim passed. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can do anything. Yeah, and that's how my first date went. And I never saw that guy again.
There was your swag. No, you're not ever supposed to see him again. That was the deal. Well, that was something,
just, you know, dipping my toe in the water.
Right. So, well, interesting to go back. Well, you said you have all these accomplishments. That before getting married, that in no way is a question to me because I met my husband at 30. So to me, it was like, what do you got to show me?
Right.
If I'm going to, you know, join with this person.
Yeah.
And no, so yeah, it's funny different. When you say that, because so many of my friends, you know, who have gone through divorces or whatever are dating, finding themselves unexpectedly dating in their 30s and 40s. I'm like, oh, God, I've always been dating. I was, you know, for all that time. And I'll tell you what I found in your late 20s, 30s, when you know yourself a little bit more, I was like, you go on a bad date. You know, it's a bad date 5 minutes in. You know, this is not the person.
Oh, gosh,
And so many friends like, but then I feel bad. And I was like, no, you don't feel bad for not wanting to marry 99% of the population in this world. Okay. Don't feel bad about that. There are so many awesome, amazing men that I know that I love that I would never date. Yeah. That's not an insult. It's just the case.
And it the takes other thing one. Too, it is, it takes one, right?
And if that person's not next,
you're totally right. But here's what I tell my clients is that don't settle.
Yeah.
You've already had the best. Why settle? Like, if you're going to put yourself out there, play the numbers game and just, you know, be okay with having to meet 50 people first before you meet the one who sets your soul on
Are
fire.
Are you saying
right?
You want me to recommend you for The Bachelorette? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
They'll take an old hag, Abby.
They will. They're starting to take old hags. And
awesome.
They love a widow story. God, do they love a widow story. And I want to tell you this because I think you know I'm obsessed with The Bachelor.
I love The Bachelor too.
Oh no, you're in trouble now.
We have that in common. We have that in common.
Oh, okay, so you know what I'm talking about. I think they're gonna make, you know, Widow Dude, one of the front runners. Nice dad, very cute. Lost his wife to cancer a year and a half ago.
Oh,
totally suddenly. Yeah, young dad, and like all the guys love him. All the women love. Like he's just an amazing person with an amazing story. But I think they're going to sabotage. I think the producers are going to sabotage it so that he can be the next Bachelor. Dating again with children after.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe this is our podcast, Ubra. Yeah. Own podcast. Right? Batch. Yeah.
Yeah. Dating without baggage. All right. I actually have
I know you have to go. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. If people want to learn more and find your book and learn about your Facebook, all the things you're doing, go ahead. Plug it. Where do they go?
JenSantanello.com or email me, jen@jensantanello.com.
Jen Santanello.
And the book will be on Amazon.
On August 3rd, 2021. You go to Amazon for those first few days.
It'll be free.
You can download it. Free download. For free. So how much does it cost?
Free.
Wow.
Except for the paperback.
Free
download. Free download. Yes. What?
Say the whole thing again. I'll make a promo and stick it in my thing.
It's called The Widower's Guide to Reclaiming Happiness. And it will be available on Amazon.com August 3rd. And for the first couple of days, it'll be a free download. So go grab your free copy.
That is awesome. Thank you so much. We will talk more. Go deal with your kids. I love you.
Awesome. Love you.
Well, I know my way around New England. I can tell you that much.
Put the tea on. I have stories.
Yeah, everything was fine until Connecticut when Bill had to slam on the brakes and swerve out of the way at some dingleberry coming out at the wrong place at the wrong time and threw me onto the floor. And he's like, oh, my God, are you OK? I'll pull over. I'm like, don't you keep moving. You keep moving.
Drive.
There's no stopping.
Drive.
Oh, no. I'll get up somehow. I wanted to tell you. Stay on the floor.
You know, regular listeners of our podcast will remember that Becca had to be treated at the hospital for the most beautiful people on the planet.
Yes.
For this situation. And Becca, I want to tell you, guess who is putting two holes in my spinal cord? The most beautiful people on the planet. That is where I'm having my surgery.
Do you need any MRIs?
I already got it. I'm sorry.
Oh, was the guy in the black jeans and the black V-neck t-shirt there?
I didn't get
there?
My MRI there. I am going to get my future surgery there.
Yeah, you'll have to work out an MRI there and see if the
dude works there from 7 years later.
Yeah.
You can just like 10 years, maybe? Walk by. Like, hey, checking out my old friend here.
Yeah, I heard there's a guy that wears jeans in the MRI room. It could have just been my friend all high on morphine.
Could have been.
Or all jacked up on that morphine. Oh, no.
That's so funny.
So, story time is over.
Those were some good stories. I laughed really hard.
I mean, what do you consider your ride home from my wedding? Because you were definitely like on the floor of the
van. That wasn't the trunk. That was
no,
just
but it was pretty low.
It was low, like emotionally.
Right, emotionally.
And yeah. It was again Connecticut. Fuck Connecticut. I'm making a ferry one day. It's going to be called the Fuck Connecticut Ferry, and it's going around Connecticut because fuck Connecticut. They'd be trying to kill you all the time.
I know.
That was the only issue. That was the only issue on the way home. I'm just laying in the seat. And I said to the hospital, I was like, listen, you give me one big blast of whatever you've been giving me and like throw me in the van and then maybe throw me a pill or two that I can take if shit gets a little out of hand on the ride home because I absolutely cannot have surgery in Maryland. I need to get home. Everybody is at home.
I always do this dumb bitch.
She learn from my mistakes, children.
Even when I don't want her to make me laugh, she makes me laugh. It's so obnoxious. But guess what, Kim? You're going to be jelly. I think we're going to go visit Becca.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're going to
have some cool for you guys.
Fun up in Maine, yeah. I don't know, because of COVID, whether Henry will be able to make it up there. Like, maybe I'll just leave him at my parents'. But I will for sure get to see at least Becca. Hopefully, Belle. Hopefully, Wilbo.
Yes. Well, that would be so cool. You can bring me back a lobster. Isn't that where the lobsters are? And they're in Maine. Yeah.
That's the thing, like, right? Just it is, but yeah.
I don't know. I've never been to Maine.
It depends on where in Maine you're going, man.
Maine Justice.
Yeah, we're in the territory.
Oh.
Literally, it's like, welcome to this town, That's what it says on the sign,
It really says it? No.
Yes, it does.
It's like, hi, y'all. But
no.
Not really, but I'm saying it's that quintessential of what people say.
Yeah, it's like the y'all of the Northeast. Or down east. Like, if you're going from Boston north to Maine, you would still say you're going down east because the term originated from the sailors.
Hmm. Down east. Interesting.
Yeah, so come visit Maine.
Maine.
We're not in the fancy part or the liberal part, but there is a college nearish by.
Kim would be coming to see you, not to sightsee.
Oh, well, there's sights to be seen, like beautiful. The house with the nose down plane in the yard.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yep. And that's just one of the ridiculous vehicles in there that's got like a couple of really big sideways boats.
Really?
Yes, like abandoned Mack trucks. Bill noticed, because usually I'm the one that's driving, he's like, the upstairs windows were all busted out, but they just wadded and stacked a bunch of clothes in the holes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but they have new windows now, so I got that going for them, which is nice.
Which is nice. I have to tell you, Cam, back when Becca first started taking digital photos, one of her obsessions, and like we had to stop the car to get out, take these pictures of any car that had like a different colored door than the rest of the car or multicolored doors, like it would make her laugh so hard. And it always was in like just areas of town where you don't want to stop and like take pictures and just make a big scene, and Becca would be like, "But look at that!
Yeah,
like the people walking.
That's not a Subaru, but that's a Subaru fender. That's amazing. It's beautiful." And I'd be like, "Just take the goddamn picture and shut up, Becca." No, I don't have the right angle. I have to like walk over here. Meanwhile, she's wearing like gigantic cat-covered pajama pants and a jester's hat.
Yeah, probably
with bells. That's up.
What if, like, someone, like, was walking to their car? Did that ever happen when you were taking pictures? And, like,
there was one place
checking out my hot ride.
Jerry insisted on pulling over in Maine. I'm like, you don't just pull over. Like, that place with the nose down plane, you don't stop. You keep rolling. There's no stopping. Because I will say, you're coming up a big hill from the main way. And it's like, it says the address on their big giant mailboxes. It's one of those big giant farm mailboxes. But on the other side, you know, those like sticker letters you can get at the hardware store?
Mm-hmm.
It says meth. Yeah. They're like the hot scrapple.
how many letters will you be purchasing today from the hardware store, ma'am? Oh, just M-E-T. Four letters. I just want to spell what I sell.
I just want to spell what I sell, yeah.
This is so inconspicuous.
They'll never get the code.
No one will ever catch on.
Never. And they're like, it's not on the main side of the mailbox. Even though it's a two-way road, it's a loop.
No. Ow. But Becca, why does it say math?
It's a mess.
There's got to be a reason. Their name could be like, maybe they're Methodist and part of it fell off.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't seem to add up. That seems to make way more sense.
No, but
listen, if you're on meth, you do not have the wherewithal to go to the hardware store and like pick out letters, pay for them.
I don't know, man. They're up for a long time. They might have thought it was a great idea.
No, because I've dealt with so much shit in the criminal justice system. Like, if you have meth, you like disassemble a bike. Like, it's just not a creative medium. Like, you do not get
don't judge all meth
heads. No meth heads play Scrabble. Okay, let's just be clear about that.
Don't judge a meth head by its cover,
man.
I'm
not judging the meth head.
No, I'm kidding.
I am judging the mailbox.
I'm kidding.
I mean, I guess extrapolate what you will, but it seems pretty cut and dry to me based on what I see of the property.
Oh, did you put up the sign?
No. Here's your sign. And I do, we take people around, and like, if we haven't been up here for a while, we always got to go hoop the house, man. But really, like, at the end of the day,
have you ever tried to buy meth from them?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so, well, let's
I guess I
that.
We can't.
We'll never know.
I'm not
going to
do any hard hitting reporting from the dirt road either. There'll be none of that. None of it.
I think we're going to need you to try the product to really understand the mailbox message.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. So.
Is it because your mommy's too loud?
Oh God. That's freaking hilarious.
No, Henry, you need to go to your room. Henry, down. But I can't sleep. Okay, go to your room. I'll come in and check on you in just a few minutes, but mommy needs to finish up her work, okay? 7 minutes, I will come check on you.
I'll give you 3.
Oh, you'll give me 3? Okay, thanks.
I'll give you 3 minutes.
He'll give me 3.
You're gonna get 7.
He can't tell time. What negotiation does he think he's making? Like, he's so smart.
It sounded a good...
that the world is a gaslight to you if you can't tell time.
Yeah, the world is a gaslight.
Say, you know what I mean? Like, okay, 3 minutes. Great. Sounds great. Go ahead and count, dude. You don't know how much time is. Anyway. Oh, Beth. Oh, my God. The meth house. Oh. Can you tell? Who's making that noise now? Is that Becca making noise?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. The house. Will you talk? Did you ever talk about on the pod your first car, Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme?
I think we did, didn't we?
I think we did. I just don't remember if it was recorded. Okay.
Wait, not the van.
Mm-mm.
Not that
not
one.
Not Van Adelphia, and yeah. Not Helen Van Honda either.
That's what Helen Van Honda. That's the one I was thinking of.
This was my first car, the one that was like in that shady barn.
I don't know if I've heard. Oh, wait. I think maybe you did. Wait. Say it again, because I think I
knew, like, if it didn't go in reverse.
Right.
I had to, like, get out, like, pop the hood and take the air filter lid off and then jam a screwdriver in the, like, tractor hole. And then turn on the car. And then take the screwdriver out and put the lid back on and get in the car and go.
Yeah. What's not convenient about that?
Nothing whatsoever. And it had a squeaky fan belt until you got up to like 25, and then like the world's most sensitive brakes. Like, my God, if you so much have even thought about braking, it was like, slam on your brakes. Like, it would stop on a dime to that.
Oh, my gosh.
Thing. It was, like, way too... It's a 1986 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme, powder blue. Thing was a beast.
Damn.
Do you remember going to that party in Connecticut?
Yeah. Let's save that for another day.
Save that for another day. I was just thinking of stories.
Yeah, write this down. To be remembered.
Yeah, because I want to hear it.
It was like Becca's first time getting drunk, basically.
I think we gotta go, though.
I do too.
All right. Thanks for the time, ladies.
Love you all.
Yes. Goodbye.
Bye. Night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Sex, Politics, and Bacon. Please like and subscribe to the pod. For more information on Jen Santanello's new book, A Widower's Guide to Reclaiming Happiness, check it out on Amazon.com. The pod is happy to report that since the book debuted on August 3rd, there have been over 1,000 copies downloaded worldwide, making it an international bestseller. Congratulations to Jen for all of her success. Please visit jensantanello.com. That's JenSantanIello.com.
Boston? Can you say bye-bye?
Bye-bye. See you next time.